Today is Wednesday, October 10th, 2018, and this is Daily DVR. All right, welcome back, everyone. My name is Axel. Daily DVR is a part of the DVR Podcast Network. Check us out at dvrpodcast.com. Become a patron, get the show 5 days a week instead of three. Go to patreon.com/DVR. You can also email us, dvrpodcast@gmail.com. Well, I am tired. I got to tell you, my little guy had, walk the kid to school, day. And, I walked the kid to school. I've been taking him to school the past couple days, not been sleeping well. I get to sleep normally pretty late. So, I'm a little tie-tie, but, daddy's going to pull through the show, as they say. We got a lot of good news. We're going to talk about Better Call Saul. Got a quick podcast suggestion. And I hope you all, if you're a patron, I hope you enjoyed DJ Tim Hines and I getting loose and getting, we were pretty stoned. Let's be honest here. We were pretty high. And we talked about Comic-Con and it was pretty fun. And it was a throwback. I got to get Heath to do one of those with me. All right, let's jump right on into the news. And I want to give a shout out to Tarek and Gareth, who had already suggested to all of us that we watch Bodyguard. It was on the BBC. It was a huge hit over there in the UK. Had like 10.4 million viewers for the finale. And now it's coming to Netflix. And it's coming to Netflix pretty soon. October 24th, in 14 days, 2 weeks from today, it premieres on Netflix. That's awesome. Remember back in the day when something like this would come out and it would take like, I don't know, 5 years before it even appeared on VHS or so. It's just, you know, I'm the next piece of news. And first off, I want to tell everyone. So this is just a little bit of a description. As the series begin, Madden's David Budd is on a train journey with his young children when he catches on to certain clues that something's awry. Soon enough, he's working to ensure that a female suicide bomber doesn't carry out her mission. That's pretty cool. It's like a Homeland-esque type thing. I love it. I'm totally down for this. This is amazing that it's coming so quickly to Netflix. I'll definitely be watching this. I'll be watching this with my wife. This stuff is coming so fast and furious. Like I said, the next piece of news I have, which made me kind of giggle, but then I'm like, who knows? Now I'm like, maybe it'll be good. Frickin' Snapchat. What is Snapchat? Look, I don't know. I'm 44 years old. I don't know what the fuck Snapchat is. I'm not even on Instagram. People say I should put the podcast on Instagram. I don't get what Instagram is. Is Instagram just Twitter with pictures as the base? Like, it's just the reverse, right? Like, instead of the text being up high and then there's the picture, it's the picture and then there's a bunch of fucking text. And I heard people write, like, stories on Instagram. I don't know. I've never loaded Snapchat onto my phone. I have went onto Instagram, but I still don't understand what it is. I have enough social media in my life. I need to be concentrating more on the world that I'm actually living in the here and now. But Snap Originals is coming out. And this is the funny thing is, Vulture, which I love, and Joseph Adalian wrote this, and he's a fantastic writer. But it's kind of funny that even him, and I know he's been around for, I mean, he's around my age, so he's been around for a long period of time writing about this stuff. But it's kind of funny that they're like, he's written this up like it's a no-brainer. They're short form. It's like you, and it's like, it's kind of the things, culture just devours itself. That's what it does. Culture devours itself. And it's a circle and it's a snake eating its tail. And I was writing about this in 1998. Okay. They were called webisodes. Now they're called, short form content. So it's like a soap opera. Like little episodes. They're only 10 minutes long. We're not taking a 50-minute episode and chopping it up into 10 5-minute pieces. Each 5-minute episode is actually scripted like a full narrative. I just think this is kind of funny. Just all different ways to advertise content, and it's just really like it's going to have augmented reality. And let me tell you something. Look, hey, Joseph, I got to tell you, man, you're a great writer, and you put a good amount of work into translating their PR gobbledygook into Vulture and getting a paycheck from Vulture, because I know that's – I mean, he's the West Coast editor, but – this is kind of a funny article. I have to admit, this is kind of silly. And it's written like that too. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if this was a sponsored article here, but it's more stuff, right? Snapchat now. I'm going to watch like a 5-minute webisode. Mike made a whole series called Carl and Bernie. It's on YouTube. It's fantastic. He had a deal at one point in like Vimeo or Crackle. I can't remember what it was releasing them. It got some press. Go back and look at it. Carl and Bernie. I'll put a link to it. And those are little short episodes that Mike made. So instead of going on Snapchat, you can go and look at that. But yeah, I don't know. Let's see what they are. Class of Lies, a college set mystery from Riverdale writer Tessa Lee Williams. Doesn't sound bad. Co-ed, a comedy from Love writer Mason Flink. Love, I kind of dipped out. Love is a little not that great. They'll be joined by an adaptation of The Dead Girls Detective Agency, a horror anthology called VHS, which was already 2 movies, by the way, because you can tell. Yeah, this is, as a journalist, I spent a lot of time regurgitating press releases. Actually, my job when I first started in journalism was to re-edit the nationally syndicated columnists for the Star Ledger, the largest newspaper in New Jersey. So in 1996 or 95, when newspapers were pretty big, the internet was just coming out, you know, I should say the World Wide Web was really more kind of forming, and I would edit them. Me, I was 20 something years old. Okay. Trust me. I cut out a lot of stuff I didn't like. I would just then regurgitate press releases. I wrote book reviews. I wrote articles like this, and This is kind of funny. I'm kind of having a flashback with this, but all right, on to more interesting news. James Gunn is back. So, you know, he was thrown off Guardians of the Galaxy because he wrote like, I don't know, nasty stuff on Twitter or something. Honestly, I got to be honest, I don't know too much about what he wrote or what the what was surrounding him, so I can't have a completely educated opinion on whether he should have been thrown off. But my initial reaction was he told a bunch of jokes on Twitter that were pretty bad and also like nasty, and they were jokes. I don't know. This guy has always kind of, before he got into the Marvel stuff, he kind of made a name for himself being more like risque, you know, and you see it in his earlier work and some of the stuff he's done outside of the films, like music videos and people he's worked with. He's risque, you know, but, I don't know. That whole thing was kind of silly. And from what I understand, it was really pushed by a right-wing blogger. And I'm partisan. I don't give a fuck. So if some asshole is trying to get this guy out of his job because of a few jokes he told, it's kind of playing, I understand, playing the PC against itself and blah, blah, blah. Okay, have a nice day. Go read Ayn Rand and move along. And now this guy's back and DC hired him because he's obviously can handle these huge movies and not a lot of people can because it's a fucking job. And you're dealing with shooting, what, 90% of the stuff on green screens? Even the practical sets are half draped with green and blue and nothing's practical. You've got it. This is a job. That's hard to do. That is you to be able to hold that in your mind at the same time constantly is incredibly difficult for people to do. And that's why a lot of times I think he did a good job is what I'm trying to say from a technical perspective. I thought Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was completely derivative and it was like the same movie as one. And Chris Pratt is kind of ending. He's getting towards the end of his I'm a cute big guy and he's kind of wearing thin on me, especially the Jurassic Parks where I think he was totally miscast. And as the whoever that those movies are just not good and they could have been. And he and Bryce Dallas Howard are actually talented, but the films were pretty bad. The last one, I actually thought the second one was better than the first one. But both of them overly long, bloated, mega IP stuff. And anyway, that's my digression on Chris Pratt, who I'm kind of tired of, by the way, and was a lot funnier when he was the fat guy on the couch in Parks and Rec. But this is pretty cool. I think this is awesome because they're bringing Gunn in to do Suicide Squad. And that, I think, is a great idea because I have now become a fan of these DC animated movies and one of them is called Hell to Pay Suicide Squad and it's a lot of fun and I never read those comics. So this I see what this could be because the Suicide Squad, the first one, again, it was awful. It was laughably bad. And I think that this guy Gunn could come in and do a good job. So I think he has the right tone where he's like risque, but he's not, I don't know how to describe it. He's like Marilyn Manson risque, you know, people who think Marilyn Manson is really dark, you know? And it's like, that's kind of like, you know, that's kind of, you know, like run of the mill. Ooh, I'm creepy. Look, I wear a weird contact lens. You know, like, so I think that James Gunn, it'd be kind of bring that edge to it, you know? And I think that there's a lot of people who like that. That's not my aesthetic. Obviously, you see me kind of laughing at it. I apologize if it's yours. But I think that he has the right tone for it. So that's pretty cool. All right, moving on. Netflix again, an original movie, which sounds a lot of fun. Dwayne The Rock Johnson, this is if he's not president, is going to reteam with Jake Kasdan. You know who Jake Kasdan is. His dad is a pretty cool guy. And they're going to do John Henry and the Statesman, the old John Henry song. Remember that? That's kind of like American folklore. And that's what it's going to be. And it's going to be from all over the world. So it's going to be kind of like a folklore IP. You know, they tried Hansel and Gretel. That didn't work. Wasn't like Jeremy Renner in that or something, Hansel and Gretel. But this sounds kind of fun, you know, The Rock, John Henry, his disruptive band of fellow folklore legends from around the world. Like everything's a press release. But hey, that sounds kind of fun, right? I think it'd be cool. Good for Netflix. Good for The Rock. I love The Rock. Look, I'm a fan. Anything The Rock does, I'm probably going to watch it. I don't know why. It's the same thing. Like I was said this to my wife the other night. We were watching Sicario 2, Day of the Soldado, which makes pretty much zero sense, but it's a lot of fun. And I suggest that anybody watch it because it's shot great, but it's really grasping at straws of trying to be, it tries to be so smart that it makes no sense because it's not smart. And it like literally characters act in a way that is completely detrimental to their own well-being. And it's just part of the movie. but it's a fun movie. And what was I saying? I was saying to my wife, saying, I don't know why, but Josh Brolin is, even though in real life he's supposed to be a fucking pig, he's not a nice guy, whatever. This is like this divide we have in, you know, he is just watchable. The guy is a great actor. He just has a magnetism on screen. It's like Tom Cruise. I know the Scientology is a whack job, but I love watching Tom Cruise. I admit it. I love watching Tom Cruise. He is magnetic on screen. He just is good at that job. And Josh Brolin in Sicario is fantastic. It's just, he's a dumb action guy. You know, he's good at it. But Dwayne The Rock is the other way. I like it. Personally, he seems like a nice dude, whatever. Who knows who these people really are? That's how I always think. I don't, you know. That's why going back to the Comic-Con thing, with that DJ Tim and I talked about, I think that is fun when you get an opportunity to actually talk to someone. You still don't know who they are, but at least you can say, oh, okay, hey, look, I made some kind of personal connection. And sometimes you do get to hang out and talk to a person who you otherwise wouldn't. I've had the opportunity of working on some sets to actually spend a considerable amount of time with some people. And you find they're human, and a lot of times you have to admit, they might not be in a good mood. They're an asshole, whatever. They're just doing their fucking job. So basically, long story short, Dwayne The Rock Johnson does his job. And his job is to be compelling in a movie. And I'm going to watch Skyscraper this weekend. Is that the name of that dumb movie he's in? All right, that's all the news I got for today. Let's go ahead and check what's on the calendar premiering tonight. Okay, this, another one. Paul, this is a tough one, and I really want to see this movie, and I've wanted to since I heard it was coming out, but this is going to be hard to watch. So it's Paul Greengrass. It premieres on Netflix. It's called 22 July, and it examines the 2011 mass shooting at a youth camp near Oslo, Norway, that resulted in 77 deaths. There was a Norwegian film called You July 22. This new film examines the aftermath of the horrific events through three different lenses by focusing on the survivors, Norway's political leadership, and the attorneys involved in the case. The film will also get a 1 week awards qualifying theatrical run in a few theaters, which is so silly that they still do this. But again, that's the theater owners. They have a lock on that. So for some reason, why it matters anymore, I have no idea. But that's going to be a tough one. Paul Greengrass, great director. Wondering how much handheld camera is going to be in this. I'm gathering from his previous work, a lot. I don't know if the S.H.I.E.L.D. crew is going to shoot this for him like he's done in the past. But this is, I don't know. That's a pretty tough thing, but I'm going to watch it. I think it's going to be cool. On the CW, Greg Berlanti continues his streak of being the most prolific television producer, definitely working in television today, if not in the history of television. I think he broke the record already. It's a new show called All American about a rising football star in LA's Crenshaw neighborhood who, it's a fish out of water, is recruited to play for the somewhat ritzier Beverly Hills High. This is Metacritic I'm reading. Taye Diggs is the coach. So, I don't know. I had an inclination to record this because Berlanti's fantastic. I think what I'll do is when this hits Netflix or something, maybe I'll check out an episode and see if it's any good. Is there anything coming? I was going to jump into what I was watching because I had something related to that. I wanted to see if anything came on Just Watch, if any. Well, I talked a little bit about Netflix. Oh, okay. Amazon has, now this is hard to tell because sometimes things fall off and they fall back on, but the Clone Wars is on Amazon, and I think they're adding episodes slowly, but that's good to know. Stephen King's The Stand, the original TV. Remember, we were talking about that the other day, right? Sometimes they come back. This is the original Mick Garris TV version of The Stand is on Amazon. Amazon has been releasing, this is another one, Fifth Passenger, which I am adding to my list. Amazon has, in the past week or so, released like 5 or 6 Expanse-like movies, okay? I think that they are going out and purposefully buying. Netflix does the same thing, by the way. When Netflix knows that it's going to be releasing... So this week they're releasing The Haunting of Hill House. And this is supposed to be fantastic. It's like on Stranger Things level. We'll talk about it later on, probably tomorrow or Friday. And I'm really excited to watch it. And what they do in advance is they start pushing horror stuff in their suggestions, and they pick up and put a lot of older horror films on the service. And they do it months before. I think Amazon is doing this on purpose because of The Expanse. They're going to be releasing the next season of The Expanse, and I think what they're doing is they're slowly lifting up their catalog of hard sci-fi. Most of it is B or C level stuff The high level stuff is the Marvel movies and everything. Those are really sci-fi, the comic book movies, right? They're sci-fi movies, action adventure sci-fi. So this is another one, Fifth Passenger, and it actually has a bunch of Star Trek characters. Marina Sirtis is on it, if I can pronounce that correctly. Armin Shimerman, who was in Deep Space Nine, was Quark, is in it. So it's kind of a fun little hour and a half sci-fi movie. Might be fun. Check it out. Amazon. There's this show I wanted to check out. And speaking of the UK, London's Burning. It was an old 70s fire station show, drama. And I always wanted to check that out. But Amazon, for some reason, it keeps on going off and on. Like every 6 months, I see it comes on, then it comes off, then it comes on, then it comes off. So I always wanted to check that out. Has anyone ever watched London's Burning? Is that like a throwback where we have our shows we remember from being a kid? Was that like always running or something? That's how I imagine it. I imagine it's something that was like kind of syndicated. Let's see what else we got. Alongside with 22 July, this is really important. Netflix has a Nick Cage movie called 2-1-1, inspired by one of the longest and bloodiest real life events in police history. Oh God. All right. Well, it might be kind of funny though, because Nick Cage, if you've read the recent interviews where he admits that he just goes on these movies and acts insane, and he has a lot of fun doing it. You know, they're like comedies to him. And it made me kind of want to watch more of those. Let's see. Hulu had a couple of cool things. I saw a young Justice League cartoon came back on there. I keep on saying we're going to get Hulu, but then I never order it because there's so much other shit to watch. But some point we'll get to it. Let's see. So one of the things I was going to mention was that because I wanted to talk about what I'm recording and what I'm watching, is I've made the decision, and I want to know if anyone else has made this decision, and it's not on tonight, but I have decided that I'm going to wait until The Good Place is over the whole season to watch any of it. I watched the first episode, and then I didn't watch the second. And the reason why is because I firmly believe that The Good Place is better watched binged. I don't think it works as well when you watch it week to week. It's such a complete story that I don't want to wait a week. Not only do I not want to wait a week, I really think the show benefits from being binged. So I'm waiting on The Good Place. Don't know why I wanted to mention it, but I did. All right. What I recorded last night, Married at First Sight. I'm not even watching this dumb show anymore. My wife wants to watch it. Below Deck, I think that's so fun. It's so stupid. Mayans hasn't watched it. The Flash has returned, and I'm going to watch it with my son when he gets home from school today. We watch The Flash together, and I have to thank Michael Aaron, who first kind of gave me that idea, and Lachlan loves The Flash. Black Lightning returns for season 2, so we got the CW getting back into swing with the superhero stuff, and I love that stuff. And since I've been watching these DC cartoons, I'm all into it. I think it's great. Mr. In Between on FX, that was renewed. I still haven't watched any of it, but I'm going to watch it. Maybe I'll just binge it. But that was renewed in an Australian show, so I think it's going into co-production because I don't think originally it was. So that's interesting. Carter, which I'm still watching, it's a silly Canadian show. And part 2 of American Experience, The Circus, that was actually a 2-parter. So if you missed it on PBS, I'm sure it'll pop up on Netflix or Amazon or Hulu again. Tonight, American Horror Story, which I'm actually look forward to now because it makes sense and I understand what's happening. I will watch it. Survivor, love it, love it, love it. Still fantastic. Last week's episode was awesome. Hey, I reached out to Jack from Jay and Jack, and I'm hoping that he can come on in the next couple weeks and do a show with me, and we're going to talk Survivor. It's been a long time since I talked to Jack, and he's doing a thing, check it out on YouTube and Twitter, called Crazy Hank, and he's just doing like these little 2-minute fun YouTube rants. He talked about Charlie Brown the other day. That guy's funny. I like it because it's just him. And he gets to do just kind of be crazy and funny. And I like that. So Jack is a fun guy and one of the original podcasters. When you see what podcasting is now and you think about what he and Jay were able to accomplish, what, 10, 12 years ago when it was just starting, they really are originators in the podcast realm. And I know that, you know, I don't know that podcasters are going to be remembered the same way radio and TV people were, but he was one of the originals, and you got to hand it to him. Always give credit to those who came before. So I would try to get Jack on the show. All right. I think that's all I got for what's on, what's that. Oh, I have a podcast suggestion. So I'm a longtime listener of the Tower of Babel podcast. It's 3 dudes from Canada. I've talked about the show before. The kind of main host is Julian. And these guys, I think I first heard them in the Lost days, I'm pretty sure. Sometimes I wonder how, you know, sometimes you forget how long it's been. But check them out on iTunes, Tower of Babel. I'll put a link to their website. I think it's towerofbabel.ca, and they do one or two episodes a week. They do usually a sit-down episodes where they talk kind of like what I do, news, and do it like an in-depth review of something. They also have a Game of Thrones show where they cover Game of Thrones. They covered Westworld last year, but not the second season. I was able to get them to send in a short snippet for my Westworld kind of community podcast, but they just put out a pod. Julian just did a quick in his car pod about Venom. And I really like these guys. If you like listening to us, if you like listening to me, Matt, Bubba, Heath, DJ, Gareth, all these people that you know, if you've been listening to us that are connected, Jay and Jack, then you'll really love Tower of Babel. They are very intelligent guys. They are nuanced and emotional as well. They, just from listening to them, they seem like the kind of people that you'd want to hang out with. I always think of, like, Newbie says, she's so fantastic. It's the same reason why I would watch Newbie play video games on Twitch, because I'm really hanging out with her, you know? Or you recognize the more podcasting I do and the more podcasts I listen to, I realize how much personality is a part of it. You want to have good audio quality. I've realized that more, and I try my best, as Julian is always mentioning it too, but he's a kindred spirit in that sense, doing his podcast, a fellow podcaster, and they do a great job. They cover a lot of the same stuff that we talk about, same TV shows, and with the same perspective of their fans, but they're not fanboys. You know, they're not going to blanketly love something just because. And if they do, they admit it. They say, look, I know this isn't high quality, but I had fun. And I think that that's missing. They're not overly negative, which is something that I think a lot of podcasts, review podcasts, they really have become that. The way I feel about it is, like, I was going to hate watch Manifest and talk about it on the podcast. But then I was like, but then I'm like, taking away time that I could be maybe telling someone about something they enjoy. And what Tower of Babel does is they revel in what they love and what they enjoy, and they want to share it with you. So that's my podcast suggestion today. Check out Tower of Babel. Like I said, they just actually covered the first season of Game of Thrones. They did a rewatch, and that was really good. Their whole team is fantastic. All three of the guys are great, and they're all really smart, and they're just really cool dudes. You definitely want to hang out with them. And they talk a bit about, you know, Canada and where they're from and stuff. And I wish they actually talked more about their own, like, kind of personal lives and what they're doing and stuff, because I'm fascinated with Canada. So, and I know Julian, like, has a boat and was in Cuba and stuff, and he went all over the place. It's just, that's interesting. I wish he would have done a boat episode where he just talked about being on a boat. But anyway, they're doing it. They're good guys. I think we're on a similar plateau or similar level of listenership and such. So I think it's kind of cool to throw it over to them. And like I said, I'll put a link in there. And I wanted to get Julian, or any one of them to come on the show and do one of these shows with me. I think I'm going to try to do more guests. I had fun with Justin and I had fun with DJ. So, all right, that's all I have to say about that. So check them out, Tower of Babel. Now let's move on to Better Call Saul. Ooh, wow. All right, let's take a breath here for a second. We're going to breathe it in. And we're just going to think about when I came into this season, I thought to myself, what are they going to do without Chuck? This show has so much been about the relationship of Jimmy and Chuck. And at points, I almost felt that's the only time I ever felt the Mike stuff was so secondary, right? Is maybe this is season four, so 2, 3, there were some parts where the Jimmy and Chuck stuff was so wonderful. It was just perfect that I felt pulled away when I was with Mike. Not all the time, just certain episodes. To take the entire fourth season and have Jimmy ignore that his brother is dead, that the most important, probably the most important person in his life, love him or hate him, was Chuck. His entire life, slipping Jimmy, being a lawyer, his being, who he, how he conceived of his own self was through Chuck. And to have him ignore it the entire season, and then at the nadir here, when he's going back to the board, he and Kim have put forth this whole plan. Again, Kim surprised me. What her way of manipulating the situation was to do it totally legally, okay? She didn't want to break any laws. This plan at the end of last episode when she said, well, you want to be a lawyer? Let's start there. She had a different plan, and her plan was to use her intelligence and her craftiness to show them it was all about Chuck. And then Jimmy comes up with the idea of the letter, which is Chuck. And she, oh, this is perfect. And they're being, I don't want to say mischievous. Yeah, they're being mischievous about it throughout the episode. It's a plan they're working on, and oh, we're going to get them, and you know, but they're not being, for her, you can tell that she wanted him to face the Chuck stuff. That part of the plan was almost that she would trick Jimmy into facing Chuck, into talking about it, right? It's not said in the show. There's no direct signal, but you can tell. And just the way Kim is so on in this episode, and it's, you look back in all the scenes with her, she's just working again in this. She's in work mode, right? It's Kim with her head down until the end. And he fucking tricked me too. I'm not going to lie. He tricked me too. And I'm getting a little emotional thinking about it right now, honestly. But he tricked me. I thought that he was being sincere at the end. I thought when he put the letter down, I thought he's being sincere. And then I said, no, oh no, he's not. This is a fucking ruse. And then I thought that he caught himself up in it and he was being sincere. So the whole season, to build up to that point, and it was a manipulation, not only of the audience, of Kim, it was meta, and it was just amazing. It was absolutely fucking amazing. It was, again, one of the best episodes of television that I've seen in a really long time. Because it's so human. That's what this show is. It's human. And I love Game of Thrones. I love Westworld. But my biggest complaint about both of those shows, which we're currently covering and everybody's into, and look, I know people love Game of Thrones and they're really into that world, but it's just not my thing. And really the reason why is because of the lack of love. And that's why I've always been such a Lost head, and I will stand up for Lost in all situations, because it's a show about love. That's what it's about. And I'm a guy about love. I don't always achieve it, but that's really what I think life is about. We all have our own methods of getting there, and I always try to be open and understanding, even to those who have hurt me or that I am angry at. And I'm not always good at that either. And this show is that. It's a humanist portrayal. And to do what they did here, it was masterful. It was absolutely masterful because I did not feel taken advantage of as a viewer. And there's other shows that I have and I would have, and I would have thought it was cheap or they just didn't do it. And I can't even explain how perfect every time you saw Jimmy and Kim, they were just in motion. They were doing something. They were doing that. They were doing this. They were moving, moving, moving. Mike's trying to find the German, moving, moving. Then we get to that end. There's only like 5-7 minutes left in the episode. I don't even know how much time is really left because it's an oddly timed hour and 26 minute episode, and AMC sometimes pads it and sometimes cuts right to the next show. So I'm never sure. Right. And Jimmy's delivering that speech, and he fucking tricked me. And when he walked out and he started in on that shit, I started crying. I got to tell you, I started crying, and it was because of Kim, because the look of loss. not disgust or anger or surprise, but just of loss and a realization of knowing it's done and she cannot be with this man. That is what I saw. And that is the decision she should make because, excuse me, she's right. It wasn't what he did. It was the reaction and the fact that what the fuck is going on with him that he could have gone through the journey with Chuck that we all saw and still be acting like this. That is a psychosis. That is a man who is in need of deep, deep therapeutic help. He needs to talk to someone, okay? Because, you know, like I said, there are people in this world who think you need to understand your emotions, and there are people in this world who think you need to control your emotions. And if you think you need to control your emotions, you will end up like Jimmy. Guaranteed. I'm not trying to make judgments here, and people use language in different terms, but I think you understand if you're watching this show with me what I mean. He needs to understand, and he's looking always to control. His whole life is about control and manipulation, right? And power struggles. If you see the world in those terms, it will be in those terms. And Jimmy is a sad fucking guy. And that's why I hope for a time jump after the Breaking Bad stuff, working at wherever he's working, Cinnabon. Because I want to actually see, I came to care about Jimmy and love him through his experiences with Chuck and see where he's coming from. And hey, I have an older brother and I don't want to get too much into it, but we've had a strained relationship. It was not at all like their relationship. It was actually pretty different than that. In some senses, the opposite. But I feel that. I love my brother very much. And even though it's been hard. So this show has meant a lot to me. And I don't know. Even talking about it. Oof. All right, I'm gonna go to some feedback here because we had excellent feedback from Jenny and Andy, and they're going to help me talk about some of the other stuff. Oh my gosh, starts Jenny. Kim's look of disappointment when Jimmy started going on about the sucker with tears in his eyes. Jimmy totally missed it, celebrating his con. You're so right, Axel. Their paths have diverged through this season, and it's been so sad to watch the demise of their relationship. When Jimmy went off the rails telling that poor girl about how no one would ever give her a chance, the scholarship applicant, oy, that was another one. I was so uncomfortable. I wanted to make him stop. Like, dude, what are you doing? Are you trying to push this poor kid over the edge? It was awful. That scene was tough, right? Because there's a part of me that wanted to say, I understand Jimmy is the guy who says, what about the little guy? I'm the little guy. Nobody cares about the little guy. And I've always been suspicious of people like that in my life. What about me? What about this? Or what about, you know, they're trying to get you. They're against you. You know, they're all going to get you. He has these views of the world that have been built up, and I can see why, and we can see why through watching the show, but they're so destructive and they are so false. They're such false narratives based upon his own experience and his own emotionalization of events. He sees conspiracy in everything and the world divided into those who have it and those who don't, and they're trying to keep you out of it. When in effect, the world is, that's just a way of bringing order to not being able to handle the chaos that is life. We see that happening in this country and in many places. It's much easier to say, I'm strong. The strong do it, right? You got to get over them. You got to con them. That was a tough scene. That poor girl, too. But you never know, because the thing I liked about that scene is he says all this stuff, and he's like, do you get what I mean? And she's like, yeah, I get it. He's like, do you get what I mean? She's like, yeah, I really do. I get what you mean. I don't know. Kids these days, she might have just thought he was a fucking idiot, as a loser. You know, she's like, dude, this is like a job interview, and, you know, do you really think they're going to know I shoplifted? It's like, it's just, it's very kind of, it's funny the way, because he didn't get, and he also neglects all the chances he's gotten. He is completely unappreciative of anything that's happened for him. Who stood up for Jimmy? His brother, right? Poor Jimmy, who got his big brother to help him do everything. So it was, I got kind of pissed at him at that point. Werner, he was just so completely oblivious to what his situation actually was. How could he not know what he had gotten himself into? Ugh, you called it. Poor Mike. Killing Werner is what likely turned him into the Mike we knew in Breaking Bad. Yeah. That whole scene was the whole him following Werner, the detective work, going back to Gus. Are we going to kill him? Are we not going to kill him? Leading up to the end, which I'll talk a little bit more about because Andy has feedback too. Wow. That was, I was right. I was right about both things. I was just feeling the show, and I don't care. You know, I was wrong about a lot of things too. But this is, I think a lot of people were, I mean, this show is a tragedy. We know it is because everybody on this show ends up either dead or escaping the bad guys and the good guys. So this is an utter tragedy, this show. And we've known it was going to be that from the beginning, pretty much, right? And Mike, the one thing I will say, and I will, like I said, get it because Andy has a lot of good feedback, is the Mike and Werner scene was an exact, I got to go back. I'm going to go back and watch it. Even though I promised myself I wouldn't, maybe in the off season, I'll rewatch Breaking Bad heading into the final, is it the final season or seasons of Better Call Saul? You never know, because they'll make another deal with AMC. Well, it'll be season 5A and 5B, whatever. But the Mike and Werner scene and the Mike and Walter White scene at the end of Breaking Bad, when Mike dies, this is the same scene. So, and I, about quarter of the way through it, I was like, this is the same scene. This is amazing. They are completely replicating it here, and it worked. And it's kind of the last straw, you know? Jenny continues, who was that guy in the lab space with Gus at the end? That was Gail. That was Gail, the original meth cook that Walter and I'm forgetting the name. This is what happens when you sleep for like 4 hours, people. He was in Breaking Bad. He played a big part in Breaking Bad. You'll remember him. He's also Wags from Billions. A great actor doing double time. A Billions double timer doing a completely... This is why Billions, you gotta watch Billions. Not only that, the priest from The Americans plays an insane guy on Billions, and Wags on Billions is crazy over the top. And as Gail on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, he's like a nerdy professor guy, you know, chemist. It's great. But yeah, that was Gail. So that was an awesome scene. How is this going to get finished? Who are they going to bring in? Are we going to have a time jump? Why was Lalo was following Mike the whole time? He got involved with the phone call at the end. I love Lalo. We didn't get any Nacho in this episode. Oh, I want there to be another episode. I want more. I want a whole, come on, give me a whole mini series with Nacho. That's what I want. I just want to follow Nacho around. I love Nacho. I love that dude. Plus, I think that actor is fucking fantastic. And I think that he should be starring in one of these big Marvel movies or something. I think he's just great. All right. That's all Jenny says. She says, I'm here. I'm interested in hearing about the technical side of the way they film the show. It adds value to my viewing experience. Thank you, Jenny. I appreciate that. I don't have too much today because I was overwhelmed by the emotions. And one of the things I did want to point out, Jenny, is actually the opening scene where it is a flashback, kind of a flashback montage of Jimmy getting his law degree, being sworn in, followed by the party where we also see Chuck's assistant singing, and then Chuck and Jimmy sing, and then they fall asleep together in bed. I was surprised. One of the things I was surprised about in this episode was there was a couple brilliant shots. The scene where Mike kills Werner is one of the most beautiful long shot. I mean, that is a beautiful wide. And the way that they also, so sound is so important. The way that they made the sound like where you were. Okay. So when you're watching, sometimes they fake it, right? And you're watching something and it takes place far away, but it's louder because it's in a movie and they want you to hear it. They muffled it so perfectly. It was the exact right distance that I wonder whether or not that audio was from the camera. I think it may have been from the camera, which in a circumstance such as that, it normally would not. All the sound would be in post. They just take the shot. They might even add the muzzle shot too, because you're not sure about how you're going to be able to see it from that far away. And things look different. Once you're shooting it through a camera, you think a muzzle shot looks a certain way, like a flare, right? Looks a certain way from your eyes. But then once you put it on a camera, it's just blurry, or it appears too quickly. So they add it in post. And that's not difficult at all to add that sound and that. But those looked practical to me. And that shot was amazing. And I wonder how practical that shot was, because replacing the sky is like done on everything now. They're always replacing the sky. It's pretty easy to mat out a sky now. And there's editing programs that are just that. They're just for matting out the sky. And those stars, in the way you could kind of see the cloud, the Milky Way a little bit, it was so perfect that I do wonder whether or not that was a composite, you know, CGI, what have you, sky. But the only problem I had, and it's fucking AMC that does this. They needed to hold the shot. They needed to hold the shot for about, I don't know. I would have held it for like two and a half more seconds. Just one, two, because it was like Mike's shot, and then it was like, is too quick. I want him to hold the shot. That's my pet peeve about fucking everything. I hate when people move the camera. I hate when you cut on a moving shot too soon. I was talking about this the other, what was that? I was watching a movie where it was like all cut up. Oh, it was the, not the Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe one, but, there was it was the Ava DuVernay movie. What was that? All right, I'm looking it up, people. Relax. Calm down. Give me a second. What was the last movie that she did? I know she did Selma. Wrinkle in Time. Okay, which was a mess. Oh, my God. Good idea, but what a mess. And, oh, man. It was just, okay. That film was a prime example of someone having a lot of money and having a technical mind for film and not being able to hold back, because there's like seven aborted tracking shots in that movie. When that happens once, it's bad. But when it keeps on happening, that is such a waste of money and time. And she just went, that movie is a wreck. She was trying, okay, but it was a wreck. And Mindy Kaling, I used to love her, but I'll save that for another day, because that's a controversial topic on Mindy Kaling. But wow. So that's my digression into shots for this episode. There were a couple of beautiful shots, but what I was going to say is the opening segment, it was shot so normally, right? I like the opening, the hard cut to the assistant just singing away. But we've seen that shot. You've seen that shot in karaoke so many, right? That was not an original shot. That they were shooting that very quietly, very nonchalantly, right? Until we get to the last shot where it's an overhead of Jimmy and Chuck lying in bed together singing the song. And that was beautiful. Slowly crawling back, getting wider and wider as they pass out. And then we cut to, the quick opening credit. And it was beautiful. And there's a couple nice little shots here and there. But this was an episode, I think, that was more about what was happening with the characters. So they held back a little bit. I will say, the framing of the final conversation with Jimmy and Kim was a pretty strict shot, reverse shot, but the way that they were being more open on Jimmy and more closed on Kim was pretty telling. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. All right, let me get to Andy and then I'm going to close this out. Andy had a lot of thoughts, of course. And he has some more feedback, which I have not forgotten about, Andy. I'm sorry if I didn't write you back. It's been a busy week, pal. And I got your other email, and I will definitely be talking about it again. So here we go. Seeing Chuck again is heartbreaking. Bob Odenkirk and Michael McKean singing ABBA was something I never knew I needed. Yeah. It was great seeing him again, wasn't it? Because I don't think he wasn't in, was... Oh, there was that one, two other times. We saw him quickly when they did the time jump. But it was great to have such an extended time and to see him sing. And Michael McKean, what an American treasure. I mean, come on. Lenny and Squiggy, motherfucker. Lenny and Squiggy. Damn. I always forget how smart Mike is. I hope they find a way to keep his character in the show for as long as possible. I love the shot of the gum going into the parking meter. Yes, that was another cool little Mike-ism. He stuffed the meter up. And then what does Lalo do? He just fucking pushes the guy through and doesn't give a shit. Lalo, I like him. There's more to Lalo than meets the eye. And you're right. That was a great shot. When I said that a lot of this was the characters, that doesn't mean that they didn't shoot the hell out of this episode. It was fantastic. I'm wondering if we will see much more of Howard anymore. I originally despised him, but have really come to love him. It would be sad to see him go. We'll see Howard. We have to see Howard. There has to be a reaction to Saul, right? There has to be a reaction to him becoming Saul now. And the fact that it was Jimmy's idea, he set this whole fucking thing up, like what he said to the girl. When he said that to that girl, I was thinking, keep that in mind, because he wants to get over on everyone. So getting this license back isn't just about getting the license back. It's about getting the license back to become Saul Goodman, to finally accept who he is. I'm not slipping, Jimmy. I've slipped all the way the fuck into a new pair of shoes, and they're Saul Goodman's. I love that. I don't love it. I love it for the show. It's not good, but I love it. Something about Jimmy using Chuck death to rehab his image just feels so slimy. No shit. At the same time, Jimmy fighting for the girl with the shoplifting record was, and his subsequent breakdown made me root for Jimmy. See, the shoplifting thing we'd have to talk about, right, Andy? Because I agree with you, but I agree with Jenny too. I think that in his heart, he thought he was fighting for her, you know? But what he said to her was, I think Jimmy's breakdown in his car is one of the only time we have ever seen the true Jimmy. Everything else is an act. He is so selfish, it's scary. You're absolutely right, Andy. And what happened soon after is that's when the plan came. Because he, when he's down, the way to come back up for him is not to feel, it's not to accept, it's to fight. It's always about fighting, right? It's always confrontational. There's always a dichotomy in either or situation for him. And I just think that, that's like the lesson of this show, and it's such a lesson of life that will never, you'll never succeed if all you're doing is fighting. Now, I know people have had to fight in their life. I've had to fight in my life. But the way I've gotten through things is through understanding. Doesn't mean I didn't fight to understand, but I think you get the gist. He was so vulnerable that the only way to get over that vulnerability is to create a completely new shell called Saul Goodman. The entire scene in the desert with Mike and Werner left me speechless. The acting, directing, cinematography, everything. It's right up there with the parking ramp scene from last week. It almost felt like it could have been in The Godfather. You know what? All they would have had to do is to take one of those cars and lifted it up on a chain so all the lighting was from above. But yeah, the way it was lit, that was practical. That was lit with the headlights. They probably had, there's some bounce in there, but I think they really tried to light that with the headlights. And I got to listen to the Insider podcast. But you're right, it was fantastic. How many times has Breaking Bad done that and Better Call Saul? It was beautiful. I'm a little surprised that we didn't see post-Breaking Bad Jimmy again this season. I don't think we needed to see it, just surprised that we didn't. I'm very curious to see where the show goes from here. Yeah, we haven't seen since he walked out of the hospital. I mean, I want to see the post because I want this show to go on forever. And I wanted there to be, when they said they were going to do Better Call Saul, I was like, I don't know how the fuck they're going to do it, but it's going to be amazing and it's even more amazing. And if they want to do a whole nother show that's post this and they call it, you know, Jimmy Loves Kim and it's his whole thing of trying to find her wherever she is, because if Kim dies, I'm going to cry my eyes out and be very upset and sad. I'll watch it. But I was surprised, but I don't know. I just take what they give me, right? Right, Ando? I know you feel the same. I did think we would see it, though. I even fast-forwarded to see if there was a post-credit thing, which there never would be because AMC doesn't even show the fucking credits anymore. They show an ad for the next show, and the credits are in a tiny little box on the bottom right-hand side of the screen. But what are you going to do? Another great episode. I'll have to think on it some more, but I'm pretty sure this is the best season of Better Call Saul, says Andy. I hate that it has become fashionable for people to say that Saul is better than Breaking Bad. I don't think one has to be better than the other. Totally agree. They complement each other perfectly. It's the same show. How about that? It's the same show. Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul are the same show. Everybody who's in it, everybody behind the camera, in front of the camera, it's the same fucking show. So how you're going to say... You could say Better Call Saul, they perfected it more. It's just a different story. I agree with you. Just like Walter White and Jimmy McGill, the shows are so similar and so different at the same time. Assuming Vince Gilligan and company stick the landing, I think it will be held in the same esteem as Breaking Bad. I love them both, and personally, I am not going to choose one over the other. The only bad thing about Saul is that we have to wait so long for more. Ando, you are a great writer, buddy. You should like blog write or something. This is very, very well written, buddy. I appreciate it. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Jenny. Thanks everyone who's been along on the Better Call Saul ride and who loves this show. I've had a lot of fun covering it. I'm not sure what show I'm going to cover next. Tomorrow, I'll talk about Mayans because I've been having fun talking about Mayans. Justin Thomas is going to come on Friday's show, I think. He may have an appointment at the time I have to record. If not, I will dutifully record. Maybe I'll be able to fly in a guest host. But thanks for listening, everyone. And again, thank you, Andy. Thank you, Jenny. What is season of Better Call Saul? Definitely for me, while it's on the air, the best show on TV, maybe the best show on TV right now. I love so many different television shows, but I don't know if there's one that's so fun, funny, cool, beautiful, emotional, meaningful, well-written, tight, plot, well-plotted, never fucking boring, always amazing, fantastic, Better Call Saul. I love it. I love the people who make it. It's human and it's wonderful. And I don't know. I can't wait for more of it next season. But then again, I'm okay because I want them to have the time to make whatever they make. And if it takes them, I don't know. When they get towards the end, AMC gets weird. So we may be waiting a while and then get like two seasons that are six episodes that come within 6 months. I mean, look what they're doing with The Walking Dead. BTW, Walking Dead lost half its audience. It's down to 6 million for the premiere. So they're gonna do this show forever and make movies. So that may affect Better Call Saul. That's why I'm mentioning it. Just as the budget for Walking Dead affected something fantastic like Mad Men. When you think about that, it makes you want to bang your head against a fucking wall. But it's true. All right, everybody. This has been a great episode. Thank you all for listening. DVR Podcast. Go to patreon.com/DVR. Become a patron. Someone out there become another patron. That'd be great. Kind of keeps the spirit going. $3 a month. You can do it. Email me, dvrpodcast@gmail.com. Have a great day. I will be back again to everyone on Friday, but tomorrow is a Patreon-only show. And like I said, I'm either going to do Mayans tomorrow, or I'm just going to talk about some fun stuff, like I always do, every motherfucking day. So go out there. Remember, people, don't control your emotions. Understand them. That's the lesson from Axel today. Peace.